got it locked. I got the headphones this time. Didn't mess up one time. I brought them in.
Yeah, well, they look good. I like the other ones, the Sony ones.
These are also Sony, but these are not over-the-ear old-school ones. These are new, lightweight ones that are just kind of like on the ear, and they suck compared to the other ones.
I give Tom a pair of those big Sony ones, and he loves them. Well, first I bought them for myself, and then I gave them to him, but he loves them because they're very soft, and
Tom would appreciate this, because Sony came out with a headphone design. I'm gonna guess and say it was 25 years ago. Uh-huh. The MDR 60 or MDR 80, and they're such classics that they're one to today. New sales are one of the top selling headphones in the business from that design. They haven't changed it.
They haven't changed.
If you look at Felger and Maz and all 90% of podcasts. That are, you see the audio of the pod, the video of the podcast,
right.
They're wearing Sony MDRs, which is astounding.
Yeah. Right.
And they're not crazy expensive.
Right. No, they were very reasonable. They're
you get them on sale sometimes as low as like $50, but they're normally like $70, worth every single penny. I take them on vacation with me because they're just so comfortable, great audio. Yeah. What I'm listening to through my headset right now is shit.
And how much were those comparatively?
These are probably like a $30 pair of headphones, but these are not one tenth the quality of the MDRs.
You know the new noise canceling ones? Because isn't the latest thing with headsets that they have noise canceling?
Yeah, that's been around for a couple of years. And Bose, listen, Bose like would love to sell you a pair of $200 headsets and stuff. This is a pair of the Sony's, but the jack is broken on this one.
These are the ones you like.
Over the ear.
Those are your older ones before you got the.
And if you look at any of the professional studios, 90% of them use these Sony's. David Calvo, this is Gloucestercast 229. It is Father's Day, and David Calvo is with us.
Good morning. And happy Father's Day, Joey.
Happy Father's Day to you as well. And it's been a very happy Father's Day in the Hauk Smith family today.
Yes.
You were very generous with Tom.
We had a wonderful Father's Day morning.
Yes, you did. And you have a new father coming to be.
Yes, and I gave Alex a gift too. I gave Jessica a gift certificate to go to the movies because the baby's coming in like 9 days. Or the due date is 9 days, so...
That's smart.
Go out...
Last rights.
movies or, so a gift certificate to Lowe's. So.
That was very sweet.
Very cool. I said, to our father-to-be, and he wrote the sweetest card to Tom it was really sweet, so...
Tom must be on cloud nine right now.
Yeah, we had a really nice morning.
Amazing. But did Liv come home?
No, but she's coming home for a very long July 4th weekend. She's coming home on like Friday, and she gets to stay till Tuesday or Thursday to Tuesday or something wonderful like that.
Does she have a nice time in Italy? Is she back from Italy?
Yes, she.
How long did she spend there?
She was there for like 2 weeks because you know why?
Living the dream.
I know because really, I was a little scared of her doing this. She was going to be in Florence for a week with her girlfriend from BU, who was getting married. So for a week before that, she went all by herself to Cinque Terre or something
where
like
is
that.
Cinque Terre.
It's on the Amalfi Coast, it's the Italian Riviera, right?
The five towns.
It's a World Heritage Site.
Yeah.
And she went there by herself. I was like...
Was she by herself?
Yeah, for the first leg of the trip. She loved it.
I thought there was a guy in the pictures with her.
No. Oh, well, she met people. She met some people.
Okay, interesting.
I read her Instagram post.
I thought I saw pictures of her with some dude. I don't know. Maybe
no,
I'm wrong.
No, she sent beautiful pictures. Just beautiful pictures.
Really beautiful pictures. Right. I know the area. And it's
right. I have another.
Paradise.
I have another batch I haven't posted. Do you think that would be weird? The whole batch from Florence. The first.
Why would it be weird?
No. Okay, I'll do that.
She's been there.
Because she's already been there.
I haven't been to Florence. I've been to the Amalfi Coast, from Rome down to Capri. It was just unbelievable.
So I have like a couple hundred thousand American Express points, and so I'm going to take the whole family to Italy next June. So
are you going to go to the Amalfi Coast?
Yes, we're going to. I think we're going to go where Liv went. She's going to be our tour guide.
Yeah.
It's going to
be
amazing.
I
don't know where to go.
You're going
to
go in June?
Probably after my plantings, and it's going to be hard because.
A lot of places don't have air conditioning in the summer.
Well, it also gets to be tourist season. Like, she was there end of May. So, I don't know. We have to go.
I was there in the beginning of May, and we got beach weather. We were lucky to get beach weather.
And
not the tourists. And everybody said this is, like, unbelievable.
Yeah.
And it really was amazing.
So, also, she noticed in Cinque Terre that they, like, she got there on, like, a Monday. Tuesday, Wednesday was great. But then there were a lot of like day trippers. It got very busy over the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
So we would kind of plan it that we would go there at the beginning of the week and then maybe go to Florence the second part of the. Anyways.
It's beautiful. You know, so David could appreciate this because in Italy,
mm-hmm.
every single thing is art.
Right.
Everything is art.
Right.
Like the way the streets are laid out
right.
is art.
That's or the doorknobs.
The doorknobs are art.
That's
but
right.
like, never mind architecture. The way that they place the fish
right.
in the fish market
right.
is artistic.
That's right.
Everything. They did not build things to last 100 years.
Right.
They built things for
thousands.
To last centuries.
Right.
You know,
right.
That's the way when they put things together and lay things out, it's like, you know, you come home and you go through like West Gloucester or something, you know, like on Essex Avenue, you see like the ranch and then the cape and then the modern house and then and everything just, I mean, there's some nice houses. I'm not trying to single this out. It's a perfect example of like how we do not think things through. And you have the houses that are seated sideways on the lot and.
Yeah.
Like in Italy, they would just never do it.
They
were just like, they would.
Well, you know, it's funny that you said that because yesterday I was at the library and right next door is that beautiful, beautiful school that's now housing. And it was just like, they sure don't build schools like they even built them 50 or 60 years ago. I mean, a beautiful architecture on that old school. And just look at, you know, I mean, that building is still going strong. Who's going to move into East Gloucester School when they, when they move out of it or whatever? You know what I mean? It's just, I don't know. Why can't we have beautiful, like even when I'm in Ohio visiting Tom's family, they still use those big old brick, you know, school buildings.
Well, they ripped all the beautiful, Newburyport did it right. Newburyport saved all those old buildings.
Right.
Gloucester
ripped them
all down.
Right.
Well, we have some beautiful old schoolhouses, like even the one on Maplewood Avenue.
Oh, I know.
You know what I mean?
I know. Right.
Well, I think the Italians are visually oriented as a group. When I went to Italy, I was in northern Italy because all the woodcarvers are all up there.
Oh.
At one point, Germany occupied northern Italy, and so you've got the sense for style and design. Plus, you've got also the ability level because the in terms of mechanics, the German woodcarvers are really good. My teacher forged all his own woodcarving tools. I mean, he forged every single tool. When I went and learned from him, he was forging everything. And he forged them for his students. But I went up to northern Italy, which is like a huge hot spot in the world for carving, and they still do it. And you find all these shops all over
amazing.
There, and and they're still doing it by hand, etc. Wow. But there's a visual aesthetic that they appreciate there, and we don't have that here as much. Here we're more computer driven here now.
Well, it's a mishmash too here. I mean, you know, there's some people are very aesthetically oriented, and then you have, you know, it's mixed. It's a total mixture, I think.
Yeah. Well, there's different. Yeah, there's different priorities, and you know, there's, yeah, I feel like insurance drives everything. And like insurance is such a big part of every budget nowadays,
right,
that you can only afford to build, or you can only afford so much, you know, yeah. Realistically, you have to make decisions, and some things have to be cut out, and some things have to be done on budgets. Whereas, you know, a lot of that groundwork was laid back in the day when let's be honest, a lot of stuff was done with, you know, the slaves,
right?
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, or.
Right.
You
or
know,
indentured
serfs,
servants,
or indentured, you know what I mean? Like,
right. That's true.
You know, so you know, you wouldn't get that done today.
Right, you had slaves.
Unions aren't building those kind of hall, you know, those kind of spaces,
well,
cathedrals.
I don't know. I like unions. That's probably not a popular thing to say, but you know, like, I look at Massachusetts has the most highly unionized, highest teacher union. Strongest teacher union, and we have the best schools in the country. You know what I mean? So,
listen, I'm not. There's pluses, like, and minuses to everything, but
yeah.
Something has to give, right? So
yeah.
Something has to. It's yeah. This or that, and I'm not saying. I think it's great that there are stable teachers get pay that are sustainable living
wages
and stuff like that.
Right.
I get it,
but
what I'm saying is,
right.
You can't afford to. You know, the money is getting redistributed, and. Back then, it might not have been right to have slaves building mausoleums,
right.
But and dying in the process, you know,
right.
Like, and not having safe conditions. But that's how it got done,
right?
Right? Am I wrong? Is there a little bit of sense in that, or no?
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit. I mean, it's not all. It's not. There's a lot of times there's gray.
Right.
It isn't,
well,
just all the way right, all the way wrong.
Right.
Sometimes there's gray.
Like, even going back to the Egyptians and the pyramids, they were built by slaves. But
right.
At the same time that they had a slave culture, they also had a working class culture in Egypt that people don't think too much about. Like all the scribes and the writers, they were paid. You know, they.
Oh,
were
the Mayans.
Yeah.
The Mayans built the beautiful spaces, right? And they
right.
They probably had a nice culture going for
yes.
themselves.
Also, but also a lot of slaves. And the Egyptians had more of a middle class, where I think the Mayans was... Oh, yeah, the Mayans did too. That's right.
I don't really... I'm not positive,
yeah.
But I know... I've
sure
been down to
that.
Tulum and stuff, and
yeah, I'm sure
it's amazing what they did
yeah.
back then.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you go around in the ruins, they kind of talk about the culture of what was happening.
Yeah.
You know, they
yeah.
they did, like, they had service, and they prayed, and they had...
Yeah,
gods.
I lived in Mexico for a year.
Oh, you
huh?
did?
Yeah.
I you lived in Mexico?
Mm-hmm.
What part?
Yeah, Mexico City. Right outside of Mexico City on the west side. So the winds blow from the west to the east. So on the west side is actually the cleanest air. So we were in an area called Cuajimalpa, and that's right at the top of the ridge, because Mexico City is basically built inside of a crater.
Right.
So that's why it fills up
with
smog. Okay.
Right.
In fact, the Mexicans are trying to work towards cleaning that up. Every once a week, you couldn't drive your car in. So everybody had a sticker on their car.
Right.
One day a week, you had to figure out some other way to get into the city. Otherwise you couldn't. You'd get ticketed if you brought your car in, because you
wow.
didn't have the sticker.
How long
That's
ago
amazing.
Was that?
In 2000.
In 2000, because...
What were you doing over there?
I got married. I met a woman down in Mexico, and I actually moved down there. We got married, and I was trying to work with a lot of the wood carvers down there, and working with international trade to bring some stuff up. And in the end, it just, I would bring stuff down, and I would say, it has to be done like this. And when I do stuff, it has to be really clean and really perfect, because it's going to Harvard University
yeah.
or something like that. So.
Right.
At some point, I would go to see these things that were done, and they just weren't there.
Yeah.
I mean, they just weren't up to par.
Yeah.
And at some point, at first I said, well, what's the problem here? And what I finally recognized was that they didn't have any point of reference. It wasn't that they were trying to do the best they could,
yeah.
but they didn't have a point of reference in terms of where I knew it was going
yeah.
and what it was going to be standing next to and all this
mm-hmm.
other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point I came back here and she stayed down there. And the truth be told, I mean, we still talk to each other and stuff like that, but it was very mutual. I said, I have no power down here. I can't make it down here. Mm-hmm. So she said, that's fine. So, you know, we've been friends the whole time. So.
Oh, that's nice. Huh.
But I went down there because...
Is it dangerous in Mexico City? You hear horror stories, gangs and stuff, no?
It's not anymore. No, you know what?
There
are certain areas, just like if you go into Boston, there's certain areas you just don't go to.
Absolutely.
Everybody knows it.
Absolutely,
you know?
Yeah.
At a certain point after in the evening, there are certain areas. But for a city that had 22 million people in it that show up on a daily basis...
Mm-hmm. Right.
The crime rate is pretty low.
Low,
yeah, yeah.
Considering how many people
gotcha,
there are.
Yeah.
Because
right.
anytime you crowd people together, right. there's trouble.
Right.
When there's
right.
space between people, there tends to be less issues. So you take a city where people are trying to make a living and
yeah.
push them all together. Fortunately, there weren't that many issues.
So I noticed when I was in Angangueo a couple of years ago, which is a couple hours outside of Mexico City,
mm-hmm.
I did notice the tremendous pollution. And I couldn't understand why, like everywhere and all the little side streets in Angangueo had old Volkswagens.
Right.
So I was wondering, like, where are all these old Volkswagens
right.
coming from? They're smelly. They don't seem to have any pollution control on them.
Right.
And then you have this, it is the most polluted city, right?
Right.
For air, it has the poorest air quality.
Wow.
Right.
So,
well, based on the crater,
right, because
it's settling
right,
in there,
yeah, right.
no place
right.
for it to go.
Well, and
right.
getting back to the being safe about things, when you live down there, the first thing they tell you is don't get into a Volkswagen, okay? Because
oh.
those are Volkswagen taxi systems, okay? You want to call for a system. So there's all these little, the monopoly game that's played any place where you know how to keep yourself out of trouble.
Trouble, right.
So.
I have a tiny story, like a long, long time ago, we had employees... And we had a guy named Byron, great, great kid, young Honduran kid. And he was, you know, he had family in Honduras. And he came to me and he says, Joe, can you look for tickets for me online so I can get back to I want to go home for the holidays. I said, no problem. I said, okay, so there's a ticket for $350 that gets in at 7 o'clock at night.
Right.
And then there's a ticket for $800 that gets in at 11 o'clock in the morning. I says, look at this one, $350, direct flights, or, you know, good times, you're all set.
No.
He goes, no.
Yeah.
I says, why? He goes, he goes, if you get in the taxi
right.
at 7 o'clock at night and you have to drive an hour and a half, they
right.
take you off to the side of the road,
right.
they rob you and they leave you. You might
right.
not even get where you're gonna go.
Right.
The taxis do that?
Yeah.
That would happen in Mexico.
Yeah, he says you don't. He goes, you don't go at night. He says you go during the morning. You go during the day, and you have someone pick you up at the airport.
Right.
That, you know, that's why you said that, because that did happen to the group that I was with in Mexico. It happened the year before.
Mm-hmm.
It happened, and the last night we're all in Mexico City, and they went out to hear live music, and
mm-hmm.
the director of the program kept saying, "Don't do that! Don't do that! Don't do that!" And it was two young guys from the University of Florida. They got taken up into the mountains, halfway up. Nothing happened to them, but they took all their money and just
right.
left them there.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Horrified.
Right, they were
horrified. Could you imagine?
Right, no way to contact
them. I did something
yeah.
very stupid when I was young and single. Single. I was in Jamaica, and I went down to Jamaica by myself to one of these resorts where
mm-hmm.
it's all... It's, you know, compound, very safe and stuff like
right.
that. And then we heard of this reggae band, Bob Marley and the Wailers or something like that. The son, not Bob Marley, the Ziggy or something,
yeah.
was playing and off into the city.
Right.
But we had to take a taxi there, and I went in the taxi. And nothing happened.
Right.
But when we got let out of the taxi, we're in the middle. I mean, there was
right.
we were the only white people, a bunch
right.
of Rastafarians, and there was a lot of sketchy looking people. Not because they were
right.
black, not because
no.
they were Rastafarians or anything, but like you could tell there was like I did not feel safe.
Like,
this was stupid of me
right.
to do.
Right.
Easily could this all could have happened to me easily,
right.
and you have to use your head. You know,
right.
you have to use your head when you travel. I didn't at that time. Normally, I do. Didn't at that time.
I had a bad situation in Baltimore, so I don't even want to talk about it. Yeah. So bad, but
anyway,
I'm just saying, it was a dumb thing for me to
do. So it can happen anywhere.
Right.
It can happen anywhere. That's right. Point. That's the point.
Right.
Just like, you know, something. South Beach. You go on Collins Avenue.
Yeah.
Fine. Washington. You know, a little bit more seedy. You go three streets behind that. You don't want to be walking around at night.
You were just there, weren't you?
I haven't been to South Beach in a while. I go to Naples.
When I was younger,
I used to go to Miami. But I haven't been in Miami. Miami goes in cycles. It gets like everybody kind of deserts it because it's like overbuilt or it's the prices get, it gets too trendy.
Right.
They charge too much for drinks or food. And then everybody kind of goes there's some other hot spot.
Go
someplace else for a couple of years. And then, like, everything starts to get run down. It's like, you know, and then
everybody wants to jump back in.
Then everybody jumps in when everything gets affordable again.
Yeah.
South Beach, Miami has gone through, like, four cycles of ups and downs. And the last time I was there, I was still married, and we went, and it was just like, like the awnings had started getting faded from the previous boom, you know, because I'd been there when it just started to come up again, and everything was sparkling and cool, and you could get a place for $100 right on Collins, and you know, and then when I went there, everything was faded, and like you know, the drinks were 12 like 6 years ago or 8 years ago,
drinks
were $12 when. Like nowadays, they might be $12 in Boston, but back then they might have been $7. You know, and you thought you were expensive then, and now you're like, oh, this is kind of not. You know, we'll find another place. Anyway, that's when we started, and then that's when we started going to Playa del Carmen.
Okay.
And that's how we just Playa del Carmen is my new spot.
It's so
we want to do a shout out to Dan Allen, but a shout out to you gave me this. Did you pay for this?
No.
He took care of you?
Dan was so, I came home the other day and there were 3 jars in my basket on my porch.
So sweet.
Yeah, it was really, really sweet. So I couldn't be selfish. I had to share it. I gave a jar to Jess and Alex and to you because I wanted you to try it. I think it's the world's best honey.
Oh, wow. It smells fantastic. Now, this is supposed to ward off the allergies, and right now we're in the heart of allergy season.
Well, also, if you saw where all Dan's honeybees are located, they're in this beautiful, there's tons of trees and beautiful flowering shrubs and trees all around.
He's like a botanist, I think.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that good?
Wow. Is this on Way Road?
Yes.
Way Road Honey.
Yes, and he is, I'll put a post up about it, and you can link to it, but he is going to be delivering it. He'll deliver it to people for now. He doesn't have a website.
Does he have a website yet?
No, but he has an email address and he has a ton of honey. He has a ton.
Tell him this. Tell him that.
Yeah.
If he needs a simple WordPress site, I'll build him a simple WordPress site.
Okay.
That
I
people can
that.
Contact him. Right. But really, Facebook now, you don't even need that. You got Facebook and the word gets around, right?
Right.
But if he's desperate for a static website page, I can help him with that.
But isn't that good?
It's fantastic.
It's
honey.
Fantastic.
It's and you said his daughter designed the label?
Yes, his daughter Michelle. She's 13. Peace, love, and honey.
Very, very sweet. Yeah. I love the logo. Check it out. Isn't that awesome?
Yeah. No, nice.
You got to put a picture of that with the show notes, right?
I got a nice picture. All 3 jars lined up on a sunny windowsill. So
all right, I'll use that and then you'll take a picture of David or something.
Okay.
Also cut flowers too.
I don't know if is he selling them because he's
a huge gardener.
Yeah.
Huge.
I did not know that.
No. He's like a botanist.
Right. All the flowers that he sold that were always on the table at Duckworth came from his garden.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had my daughter's Friday night into Saturday.
Yeah.
And
did you guys do anything special?
You know, I saw, I went and I saw Wonder Woman with the rabbit last week. And I really wanted, I've had it in my head, I wanted to take the girls to see Wonder Woman because this is, I kept telling you something. Like, I've seen Batman movies, I've seen the Superman movies. I think this is the best Marvel comic movie
ever?
Out of all of them.
Okay. Wow.
And it's a strong woman kicking men's ass, kicking everybody's ass. But she does it with grace and style and humor and everything else. And I wanted, I really wanted my daughters to see it. So we went and we saw it, and they loved it. And I'm, I was really happy to be able to kind of celebrate Father's Day that way with them.
Oh, that just came
idea.
Out?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I did a couple weeks ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, what
yeah.
a sweet, sweet idea to do that.
It was great. We had a ball. We had a ball. So go see Wonder Woman.
Okay.
I'm yeah. all about this movie. That girl is... so this weekend was the Parade of Sales.
Yes.
And in Boston.
In Boston.
And a bunch of Gloucester vessels are there participating. Mm-hmm. I'm so bummed out that I didn't get to go. It's been like a dream of mine. I wanted to go on the Lannan so bad and bounce around.
Thursday, I'm going to try to do this on Thursday, is the Ardell is going from here from 4 to 7. Because this
from here?
From Gloucester. Because from Maritime Heritage, because this is the start of the race to Canada, so they're starting from.
Oh, really?
Point. Yeah. So I'm gonna go on the Ardell then, and.
They are going to Canada. So
They're racing to Halifax.
Which
Canada.
Is not. It's deceivingly not that far.
Right.
but it's also and it's east, so.
No, but you'd see them under sail.
Yeah. You'd see them under sail. So that's, I'm excited about.
That's very cool. I really would have loved to have
seen him in Boston.
The pageantry of, you know, and being in Boston Harbor on one of our schooners.
Yeah.
I thought that, you know, how often do you get a chance to do that, you know, and it just didn't work out.
Not for me.
Well, you get to do that. That's cool.
Yeah.
Ardell's a really nice boat, and Harold is a nice guy.
Harold's the captain of that Ardell.
Yeah.
I mean, I checked.
Have you done any work on that boat? You do. We've done work on the Adventure. Any of the other Gloucester boats?
No, I didn't do any work on the Adventure. I did the work on the, what was that boat that came up here from
the one that, the Columbia.
Columbia. I did work on that.
Right.
And I didn't even know anything about it. And they just approached, they called me up and said that they wanted some stuff done in the captain's lodge. And so I said, okay. And they said, well, here's what we're doing. I never saw the video of the whole thing being built because I get a lot of these like interesting, inquisitive calls to me about having stuff done. So I don't always see the end result. So then all of a sudden the boat showed up here and I saw the video on it. I said, oh, this is a much bigger deal than I thought. I thought it was some little guy down in Florida building something. This thing is like state of the art.
Well, it was an exquisite.
Unbelievable.
Oh my gosh.
Have you reached out to them afterwards and said, hey, listen, I'm available if you have other stuff?
I haven't, but when they were here, I tried to get onto the boat at one point, and they just have all these regulations. They said you have to talk to the captain when he's up, and you know, there's a big hierarchy there.
Well, that one's a private kind
of
a yacht, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It's not really. It's not one of these boats that is public sales and stuff like that.
No, he built it based on a Gloucester schooner, and he had always had a dream to build it. So it wasn't even built for anyone.
Yeah.
It's just one that they have there.
Yeah. Amazing.
And I think they do like a lot of people, and they just, you know, you can rent time on it, basically.
Well, we have a date for the annual Good Morning Gloucester Ryan and Wood Plus 90 Cigars Rum and Cigar Sale on the Thomas Lannan.
Okay, what day is that?
Thursday, July 20th.
Okay.
I don't even know that they have it in the system to purchase the
tickets
but I didn't want to bother them for the graphic that Kylie Davis usually puts together.
Okay.
Once we get that, I'll put it on the blog and you can buy tickets. That sells out in two days.
Right.
It's one of the best days of the summer. So that's coming up.
Did you do that twice last year, something like that?
You know, so we may have.
I think you did it twice last year.
I feel like we did do it twice last year because the first one, so many people missed out, and then we had another one.
Yeah.
We did one early, and then we did one like
him.
It's such a great time.
Yeah.
It's such a great time.
I love those guys.
Yeah.
Captain Heath
took over for the old man.
Yeah.
Right.
Running the show. And Polly Five Toes.
Yes.
You know who Polly Five Toes is?
Yes, the seagull
The pet seagull that comes back year after year, and he lands on Heath's arm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and so does he go to other boats or other lobster boats?
He just loves the schooner, like I am.
Just loves the Lannan.
I am faithful to the Lannan. I'm all about the Lannan.
But he does a really good job on social media. He's always posting on Facebook and Instagram. He's a fun person to follow.
He is.
He's always a great schooner pictures.
And so they went down to Boston Friday night. They must have had a hell of a ride. Yeah. We had those downpours.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it was...
Green Dragon went down there Friday night, too.
They were, I think they were close to each other.
They had a hard time, I think. Yeah.
You know what's so funny about the Green Dragon? It's a schooner, right?
Yeah.
The thing is, like, 30 feet long. It's not that, it's not that big. You think of a schooner, you think of this big, grand ship.
Right.
To me, no offense, Al.
Yeah.
No offense, Al Bezanson, my good friend Al Bezanson. Love Al Bezanson. Look up to Al Bezanson. But to me, it's a sailboat.
No, well, there's a lot of small schooners. Like when you see
the Sugar Babe.
Yeah,
Sugar Babe.
Sugar Babe is a little bigger than the Green Dragon. Looks like a sailboat.
And also Joff and Mandy Davis, they've been working on one for 13 years. Is it called Stromboli or something like that? Anyway, so I'm going to post about that.
That's over at the railways. Yeah, is it still over there?
Yeah, it's still over there. They've been working on it
for years.
So there's lots of. I noticed in the schooner festival, there's lots of smaller schooners. I saw Al Bezanson's son Andy and Amy.
They're great.
Yeah, they were working on it last week over at the railways.
Do they have the thing on the bottom that says Free Brady on the keel?
No, that's gone now.
They repainted it.
They should have done something else. They should have done something like the Drive for Six.
Well, they were thinking about, somebody suggested Covfefe, but then they decided.
What's Covfefe?
I suggested Impeach, but they...
Oh, God, we're not going there. So what's Covfefe?
What's Covfefe?
Is that some other anti-Trump thing, too?
Well, it's something he wrote. He wrote a very incoherent tweet about... and in the tweet,
are you talking about Trump did?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The Covfefe word, and then nobody knows what Covfefe means.
There's
a lot of jokes about what is Covfefe.
I don't listen to the hardcore left or right. I just tune them all out equally, because I think everybody's so psychotically polarized right now.
But if you ever see any of Al's posts, I mean, he's been sailing forever.
It's
unbelievable.
He lived aboard his boat at, was it Lewis Wharf or West Wharf in downtown Boston before, like, you know, renting that space would be ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Al's been, Al is a seasoned, salty dude.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, I just see his, he post stuff from the past on Facebook. It's unbelievable every place he's been on.
Man, right.
That's a nice life.
Like two
That
lifetimes.
Is a nice life. But my dream has always been to, like, when, see, a bunch of the schooners, they go down to the Chesapeake Bay Great Race, and they come from here and they go down there. I always, like,
it's after what,
that's like a dream of mine to go on the Lannan, hang out with Heath and the boys, and, like, drink rum at night.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, cook out and do this stuff. I mean, it just seems like
what would
be better than that? Look like a pirate.
Right? Well, your dream may come true, Joey. You keep talking about it. Your dream may come true.
I don't know. It just seems like never. It just seems like, you know, life gets in the way of everything.
You have to dream it first before it comes true.
I've been dreaming for a long time. Anyway, so there's that. Should we talk about David? Let's talk about David a little bit. David, how long have you been in Gloucester, David?
Since 1990.
Wow, you've been here for a while. How long have you done... How long have you had a wood carving studio in Gloucester?
Since 1990.
Yeah. Had you been?
No, I was over in the Bayview area for a little bit.
Yeah.
When did you move
to God's country?
1990.
I thought you were in the Bayview area first.
Oh, you mean over to East Gloucester?
God's country. Yeah.
God's country. Oh, I think of all of Gloucester's God's country.
No.
Our neighborhood is
1996.
96.
I was in Kengor's. Kengor had a studio on East Main Street here. I was in there, and then I had another place down the Sibley Wharf. So I had two places.
Okay.
And so I used to walk back and forth all the time, from one to the other.
If anybody has a rental, what are you looking for?
Two or three bedroom, a house, or a nice size apartment, like a real two bedroom apartment, you know what I mean? Because a lot of times I go into the
studio.
Yeah.
Right.
So I have my studio, that's fine, but I'm looking for a living situation. So
if anybody has a place, send a comment or reach out to year, David on Facebook. What?
A year-round place.
A year-round, yes. Yeah. Year-round.
Yeah.
Of course. But
so
we're here to
come by. They're just so hard to come
it's
by.
It's crazy how hard it is. But David's a nice guy. He's got a beautiful son, Leon. But we're here to talk about your wood carving and craft.
Yeah, I've been expanding my school a little bit more. So I used to just teach wood carving classes, and I was really very much a traditionalist. So I was trained by old German wood carver and two Italians. So there's an old way of doing everything. But I have freed up and become more playful.
Nice.
So now we do wooden spoon making classes. We do a box, a keepsake box class. I've been doing basketry classes there. They're a lot of fun. I have a class coming up for wooden plane making, because in the old days, people used to make their own planes and stuff like that for wood, plain wood.
Hand-carved wooden boxes.
Plain wood to make tables and things.
To make,
like,
yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, it used to be, once upon a time, everybody used to use something called air-dried wood. Now they use kiln-dried wood. Kiln-dried wood is basically wood that's on the first stages of being petrified. So, because what they do in the kiln drying process is they use heat and they use vacuum systems. So it's in nature, geology, petrified wood becomes petrified wood by virtue of the fact that it has pressure,
okay,
and also heat, okay, and then also the mineral deposits.
So
the wood from once upon a time, which much more softer than it is today. So I hunt out. We've got a lot of mills around here, so I hunt out the air dried stock. For anything that I carve.
So I wonder if that, because like in our house, we have these, our windows are, some of our windows are original, on the first floor, the windows are original to the house.
Uh-huh.
And I've been told that the reason why they function so well is because they are air dried and they're also from hardwood forests.
Right.
So windows today don't function or don't last as long or function as well because because it's kiln dried and because it's from new growth forests.
Right. So if there's something called old growth wood, that's what they're referring to. Old growth wood is the design of it is much tighter. The growth rings now are, they've accelerated the growing process of a tree.
How do they do that with like
fertilizers and stuff like that.
Okay.
But
what with the old growth stuff, in fact, now they're pulling a lot of old growth trees out of the Great Lakes. So there's a lot of them that just went down to the bottom. So they're pulling up all these old logs, which are absolutely beautiful for wood carving. Wow. And my teacher, I had an old Italian guy who I said to him at one point, I said, listen, Angelo, what's the big deal with all this white oak carving and all these churches? And he looked at me and he said, it's not the same white oak. It's not the same white oak, Angelo. He took me up and he showed me a piece of white oak that was absolutely soft. Mm-hmm. I mean, like butter to carve. He said, this is what we used to carve.
Oh,
so.
Wow.
Have you ever heard a guy named Chris Wood, Ravenswood Tree?
Yeah. I just heard of
Yeah, the guy seems like he mills a lot of wood.
He does mill a lot of wood. Yeah, somebody just brought him to my attention.
And like, he's always posting like stuff, like people will, like they'll be like, walnut tree, big, huge walnut tree, and he...
Yeah.
This guy seems like he's fascinated with the milling process, and like he has all these different kind of tools.
And is he local? He's right. Is he from Boston?
I don't know where he's from.
He is local. I don't know.
It says Ravenswood, but
we have a couple people that do that. The Natties over in
he's in Ipswich.
Peter Natty, over in Lanesville. They have a mill there, and they mill a lot of stock. In fact, when I got a whole bunch of butternut trees, they milled it for me. And also Markham in Essex.
Markham,
they're also big over there into air dried stock. So we have a few more.
Do you think that they're like the people that are still doing it, like do you think that they have the appreciation for the wood? You know what I mean? Because this guy, like when he starts talking about different wood species in the wood and where it's going to go, it's not just like stock. That like, oh, you know, how many 2x4s or how many 1x4s I can get out of this that's going to go to something or other. Like he wants to place it in some place like
special.
That's going to
appreciate it
and stuff.
Well, Go ahead.
Oh, well, perhaps you know that's like when they're rebuilding the schooners or even starting a schooner from scratch, they must have to get, you know, they must be very conscious of what kind of wood they're using.
No, they get it up from, I think they get some of the schooner stuff up in Amesbury. There's a guy that has a lot up there that he mills all this stuff. Mm-hmm. The thing is, like everything, is that things are becoming more local. So food now, once we used to get food that used to be trucked in, now we have farmers markets, right? Same thing with the resource of wood. Wood now, everybody's taking the local wood and they're seeing it as an asset. Mm. And so you've got these guys that run around with these small mills and they mill the stock up and they stick it, and the appreciation is there, where once upon a time they just used to throw it into a chipper. Yeah. Or make it into firewood. So the whole mindset, like I said, the same thing that we see in the food industry is happening in the wood industry.
That's awesome. Appreciation.
Except it's not in the lobster roll industry.
It's not in the
good
lobster. Segment. You want to talk about that?
It's not in the lobster. We're going to get to that in a second. We're going to get to that in a second. We want to talk a little bit more about your wood carving workshop.
Okay,
so,
thank you.
But people can take these work. There's an introduction to wood carving.
Yeah, I have
spoon making.
Yeah.
Hand carved wooden boxes. Yeah. Basketry. I didn't know you did that.
I don't do it, but I have a woman that comes from the South Shore. She's taught basketry all over the United States and in Japan too. She's really, really good.
Wow.
That's a beautiful basket image that you have on your
farm. No, she's pretty talented. And basketry, they're actually even weaving different materials. So what they'll do is they'll take a carved bowl, and then on the top, if it's a regular shape, like what's called a burl or something like that, they'll actually start to weave basketry on the top of it. So it's actually turned into very much an art form.
What's the skill level you have to have to even take that class?
Well, it's all beginners.
Yeah?
Yeah, everybody helps each other get through the day.
That's
so
cool.
It's a long day. It's a lot of work. Everybody has fun.
Yeah. Cool.
It sounds like super fun.
Yeah. It is, yeah.
Where can people... how often do these classes run, and where can people find information?
You can see my schedule if you go to my website, davidcalvo.com or calvostudio.com or Woodcarving Gloucester. If you just want to Google it, I'm right there. And you'll find the schedule on my classes, and you give me a call. I'm very telephone friendly. I'll answer any questions for you at all. And I'm doing this all on top of my carving classes, so it's fun. And I'm doing something which is, like, I'm very much a traditional wood carver. I do a lot of stuff for architectural ornament-type things, for universities, etc. And I'm actually getting into abstract wood carving. So that's a new class that I just started for people who want to be completely free of the mindset of understanding design and kind of want to let themselves feel their way through a project. So these are all new classes for me. I'm getting a lot of interest in it, so I'm really pleased about the whole thing.
Any kind of business grows exponentially as the more you do it, or there's more people that are taking it, more people refer it, and then those people tell people, and you know, anytime you spend a little time in something that you're passionate about, you're bound to grow, you know.
Right.
Which is great.
And social media helps out with that a lot too, you know, just the fact that
doing
we can
podcasts.
Listen, my website has been my silent partner all these years. I mean, it is the equivalent of a partner, okay? Because I'm such a niche field that people, they just search and they find me. I do no advertising at all regarding my work. I do with my class, but not with my work. So social media has been nothing but a blessing for me, especially since the internet came around.
Me too. Me too in my business.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Really.
Right? So now if we want to get back to farm to table, this is just,
lobster roll.
So,
lobster roll.
Here we go.
Lobster roll.
I'll sit back. It's going to be a rant.
Here's the thing. Like, people always, every year, this time of year, there's like, the glossy map publications and the foodie kind of networks and online publications always put out top 10 lobster roll things, and people forward them to me because they're such atrocities year after year. And it's been a while since I dipped my toes into the, you know, horrible lobster roll review shaming game.
It's been a couple of years.
I looked back and it's been since 2013.
2013, okay.
But one came in today and I wasn't even going to open the email and I clicked it and I opened it and what unfolded in front of me was such a fucking disaster. And I mean, on so many different levels, this woman,
okay.
Let me see, what is her name? Her name is Lori Wilson for the Open Table website. They have a blog. Open Table is it's actually a very great app that you can make reservations. A lot of Tano uses it and stuff. A lot of other restaurants use it. Okay. But you can make a reservation through this. Mm-hmm. And I think they may sell, you know, send you different kind of deals and stuff. If you're in a location, it'll kind of alert you. Anyway, this woman writes in an article titled "Roll Call: Top Lobster Rolls to Celebrate National Lobster Day." Very exciting, right? Okay. Very exciting. June 15th, 2017.
Okay, so just a few days ago.
And I open it up, and the first one on the list is something from... let's see. The first one is from Long Branch, New Jersey. And the Avenue Restaurant, it's called. And the picture...
They don't have lobsters down there anymore, right?
They don't even catch lobsters down there. And, and let me see. So this lot... Oh, this is horrible.
Oh, that's gross.
This is horrible.
Tomatoes?
So you open it up. And
it's like a taco. I think they put a picture of a taco in there.
It's unbelievable to me. This thing has tomatoes. Mm-hmm. So this is what she writes. Order the lobster roll and you get fresh lobster with tomato, spicy mayo, oranges, arugula, all crowning a brioche bun. If you look at this picture.
Gross.
There's hardly any lobster meat, A. The big, huge tomatoes are the star of the show in this thing. And this is her top pick. Top pick, right?
That's tops. Oh, my goodness.
Then you go, the next one. Baptiste and Bottle, Chicago, Illinois. Talk about farm to table, or sea to table, in the case of a lobster.
Right.
Chicago, Illinois, not exactly known as the bastion of lobster rolls, right?
Wait, can I just jump in and think? Whenever I'm out in Ohio, everybody's always like, aren't you going to order some lobster?
And I'm like, not so much.
Not so much. If you're
in Chicago, you're going to get a steak, right?
Right.
You're going to get a steak. That just goes to... And this woman decided to put her second top pick as a Chicago
lobster.
So listen to this. Chef Jane Lintman from Baptiste and Bottle, chunky lobster roll keeps things interesting with a little fruit. The roll is created with house-made creme fraiche, fine herbs, shallots, chopped celery, and honey crisp apple.
Ew. You know why? Because the lobster meat is so disgusting, they have to hide it.
Listen, we all have heard the term, don't fruit your beer. Right? Have we all heard, don't fruit your beer?
I have not, to be honest.
Don't fruit your beer. You know, you don't put like blueberries and oranges and lemons in your beer. You just drink your beer.
Okay.
This is a perfect example. Don't fruit your lobster roll.
Okay.
Do not fruit your lobster roll.
Okay.
Next one, from King Bird at the Watergate Hotel in Washington, D.C., another place.
They don't catch lobsters there.
No lobsters, right?
No lobsters.
And yuzu mayo, if you look at the picture of this, you take a look at the picture.
Okay.
It's so much mayonnaise. You may as well say it's a mayonnaise sandwich with a side of lobster meat. It's
gross.
Disgusting. So, I mean, I don't know what this is.
You have to tell me that there's one from California.
Oh, no, I'm going to go through the list.
Probably from New Mexico.
This is the list.
New Mexico is number 10.
You have to go eight deep. Eight deep to get to anywhere where lobster would be, a state, not even a city, a state where they may catch lobsters. First, you got Chicago, Illinois, New Jersey, Denver, Colorado, New York, Austin, Texas, Las Vegas, Nevada, Huntington Beach, California,
okay,
Lake Buena Vista, Florida.
Okay, and then, I had the most disgusting lobster I've ever had when I was in California. It was disgusting. Disgusting.
Cambridge, Massachusetts is eight. Uh-huh. And Cambridge is not exactly
lobster country.
But I mean, at least they. Right. So then.
At least it's Massachusetts.
Then it goes Chicago, Illinois again, New York, Watergate Hotel, and then finally you get to a city where you would say it's a real lobster city, Stripers in Kennebunkport, Maine.
Is that last on the list?
No, there's a few more after that, but it's like 12 down till you get to a real like lobster, like seafood kind of city.
Oh, that is so shocking.
Maybe she meant to flip it the other way around. Maybe she got the order wrong.
You gotta see this. I mean, it's bad enough when people bury a lobster roll with celery and lettuce, or they put it on some, you know, weird kind of, or avocado, or they put it on a weird bun instead of the traditional, hot dog roll that's grilled with butter on each side. It's bad enough when they go with the freaky roll, but when they put fruit,
yeah,
I mean, this is just, I feel.
Why can't you just have your fruit on the side? Why do you have to have it in the lobster roll? That's so gross.
Banana land.
That's a foodie website too, right? You would think they'd have the sense.
The sense. No,
that's know that it starts over here.
Right. You really would. No, you really.
It starts here.
You really, really would. That's what you would think, that they would have. Like, who's the editor? Because this is a writer and a pretentious foodie person. So whatever. But you have to think at the top,
right,
that there's got to be someone with a little bit of common sense that's going to say, listen, in your top three, you have to have some legitimacy, and there has to be. Like a Maine or a Massachusetts based,
right.
Like it's got to be one or two, Massachusetts or Maine.
Yes.
You know, you could even say Connecticut or Rhode Island, maybe. But within the top eight, none. Las Vegas,
right? Denver, Colorado,
Chicago, Illinois.
Right. Oh,
the one that gets me is Lake Freshwater Lake, Buena Vista, Florida.
You know what? So this is all canned lobster meat. So I just think that they don't even know. Or lobster.
I don't know that it is, because you can get lobster meat shipped in. But the fact of the matter is, it's still,
I don't know.
Outrageous.
In my opinion, there's nothing like, you know, a fresh Massachusetts, or I'll even give it to Maine, lobster.
I did not want to have to delve back in. I did not want to have to dip my toes back into the horrible lobster roll review shaming game. But I was forced. My hand was forced.
So now what's going to happen? Do you think anybody will respond to this, you know, blasphemy? What do you think?
I don't know. These foodies, they got their head so far up their ass anyway. We'll see.
What's happening? Has the water temperature changed any of the migration for lobsters at all?
Has that played out yet? People always ask me those kind of questions. Our lobster landings at the end of the year, year after year, it's unbelievable. How steady they are.
Uh-huh.
And it's because the lobster industry, the lobstermen in Massachusetts, have self-imposed restrictions going back decades that have ensured the sustainability of the lobster industry. Whereas, you know, fishing industry, not so much. They fought everything that was coming down the pipe, and then they ended up with a horrible system. The lobster industry has been different than that.
And so they might have like a couple bad weeks, but then they might have some great weeks. This is how it goes.
Sometimes you have a really bad spring, and really not many lobsters get caught. But then the fall is unbelievable, and you're saying to yourself, oh my God, it's going to be a terrible year. And then in the fall, you get unbelievable amount of lobsters come in. Sometimes you have an incredible spring.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, holy crap, if this keeps up, we're going to have the biggest year we ever had. And inevitably, it drops off in the fall. And then sometimes you just have a steady year all the way through. But at the end of the year, when you add them all up, our numbers are uncanny.
That's remarkable.
It's unbelievable.
What's the life cycle of a lobster?
In regards to what? What do you mean?
Hmm?
What do you mean?
How long does it take to get to
7 years?
To get to a marketable lobster.
And that's a one and a quarter pounder or chicken?
No, 1 pounder.
1 pounder.
Around a pound. Yeah.
Yeah.
Occasionally they can be just under a pound.
Did I ever tell you about this time that I was in Lambert's Cove on Martha's Vineyard, which is like a beautiful, very, very shallow inlet, And I was walking out in the water with Olivia. She was just a little baby. And there were millions and millions and millions of baby lobsters.
Oh, wow.
That had just, cool. I don't know that much about the lobster life cycle. And then about a week later, we were there at the same little beach, and there was millions and millions of baby horseshoe crabs. And it was just the coolest place. It's called Lambert's Cove in Martha's Vineyard, if you're ever there with the
child. Did you ever tell Deborah Kramer about the horseshoe crabs? Because, you know, she's obsessed with
it. Yes, I did. And I have another note that I have to tell her, because there's one place where I'm filming. Every week I find a horseshoe crab washed up on the beach, like a dead one. But, you know, they're big, small, just so that she knows where I'm finding all these dead ones.
Yeah.
So.
Very cool.
Did Maritime Gloucester take that?
Yeah, they did. Maritime Gloucester. The one that I had, they...
And that was a living one that came in with...
That was a living one. Dave Jewell, I believe, brought it in.
Yeah,
I believe it was Dave Jewell.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. So they have a horseshoe crab over there.
Normally, they would never, like, come... They would always be like, oh, we're too busy to come get it. And I'm like, oh, well, sorry then, you're not going to get it. But they reached out to me early in the season and said, we want... all your cool stuff for our aquarium. They redid their aquarium. It's supposed to be awesome. Have you been?
Yeah. No, I haven't been, but I saw.
Right? I thought it was the aquarium that was always kind of rude to you, but no. It's Maritime
Gloucester. The aquarium as well. They're both of them, like, you know, maybe it's just the time that they would come in. It was the busiest time of the summer. But they weren't rude to me. They just, like, couldn't. I thought it's like this incredible thing that would be awesome for the thing, and they couldn't be bothered to come get it.
It's different now.
Different now, yeah.
Okay,
really cool.
Right.
And they said that they spent a lot of money upgrading the aquarium there.
Yeah.
I haven't been.
I haven't been either. And I keep thinking, oh, that's something I'm going to do with baby Charlotte. But it's going to be like a couple of years before she can do that. So I better go.
So there's that. You said that. Well, let's talk about this. Laura Ventimiglia has a book that she's in the process of writing and finishing up.
And she's been doing it for a couple of years.
Called Nana.
Yeah.
What is St. Peter's Fiesta?
Right. But the cool thing is that it's written in English and Italian. And the Italian's even in the cover, even in the title as well. And she's an author and a long-time author and educator. And she has a publishing company as well.
Did
you know that? It's called Buttieri Publishing, B-U-T-T-E-R-E-I, or something like that. And her publishing business is about archiving people's family stories and things like that, helping people archive taking oral histories. I don't know. There are publishing companies in Gloucester.
I know. We will keep up with this.
Yes. I'd like to have her as a guest on the podcast.
Sure,
it'd
yeah.
be awesome. But it's not going to be ready till the fall because she's including photos from this year's 90th Fiesta celebration.
So we got that.
But also one super cool thing about it is that all the proceeds from the sales of the book go to the Fiesta Committee.
Very cool. Very, very cool. So what's the latest with the swans and the plovers and the... I was talking to... Oh, by the way, my father-in-law works at Cranes Beach. He's like the police guy on duty.
I don't know.
He's not officially a policeman anymore, but he's like security or something.
Security person.
And he says that like all the eggs over there are done.
Your father-in-law.
Kate's father.
They were eaten.
Trampled or eaten, or they're no longer like going.
So this is not Plum Island. This is at
Cranes Beach.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, that's
terrible. I always ask them because I want to know for the podcast.
Right. Oh my gosh, I'm sorry to hear that. Because last year, Jeff Denencourt took me out there, and it's like at the tippy end. Like, you go out to Cranes Beach, you get to a Jeep, and you can only, it's like 5 miles all the way to the tippy end, and that's where the plovers are there.
You know something? Maybe he's misinformed, but this is what he told me.
Wow.
I'm just going with that.
So they had a lot of problems. They've been adapting to, like, they would do various things to protect the eggs, and then nature or the creatures would figure out, you know, how to get around it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So last year they were putting electrical fence around the nest, a huge area around the nest, a huge electrical fence, and it was turned on, you know, not during the day, it was turned on at night. But, so anyways, the plovers around here are doing beautifully. The families that I'm watching around here are doing really, really
nice.
Well. Yeah,
nice.
So.
Cranes Beach, you have to watch out for ticks. A lot of ticks in that area.
A lot of deer, yeah.
Oh, yes.
It's huge. I think it's the second highest population next to Lyme in terms of deer ticks, etc.
Wow.
I have I put together a Facebook page called Ticks Cape Ann.
Really?
Anybody's interested in it.
Oh. What were you waiting for to tell us?
Wow, that's
just
really...
like, what the hell is
so
this?
So I got, they're like 250 followers right now, but if you want to jump in on that, it's whatever anybody, if any information regarding ticks.
Okay.
I'm disappointed that I had to drag this out of you. Tickscape, I'm going to search, I'm going to put a link to it right now.
It was the lobster roll controversy that threw me off.
Tickscape Ann.
If you want to jump in on it.
Oh my God!
I'll prove you on it. Jump in.
Oh, geez.
But it's good to give everybody information to each other.
Oh,
are you there?
Great.
There you go.
Yeah, hey, yeah.
Wow, that's awesome, Dave.
And the copy. Let's see.
That's a good one.
People are chiming in.
That's a brave
you have to be really.
Who had that? All those ticks on their finger. Oh my goodness. That image. That.
Well, especially because they're bringing in another bacteria too. They're carrying more. So it's like something that you have to be absolutely conscious. Right now, ticks. You have to think about ticks the way you think about sunscreen.
Yeah,
okay.
I agree.
You have to have something with you all the time.
Right. I got Lyme and anaplasmosis around November.
It's rough.
But babesiosis is the super, super scary one.
Right.
That's the super, super scary one.
Right.
But anaplasmosis was scary enough.
All right, let's get back to
the
swans and plovers.
So our plovers are doing great. Their dads and moms are taking turns nesting.
How long before they get hatched?
Pretty soon.
Wow.
Yeah,
that would be great if they make it all that way.
Yeah, they're doing great so far.
Little cotton balls.
Yeah, that's right. Little marshmallows on toothpicks running around the beach. That's what we're going to see soon.
Yeah.
And then we have Mr. Swan, who is doing very well. He's feeding Lynn and Skip. Hayden are feeding him over at Niles, and he's too afraid.
Less traumatized? Is he less skittish or no?
No, he's still pretty skittish. He's still pretty traumatized.
Oh.
He's not going back to Henry's.
Oh, wow.
No.
They tried to capture him.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Big time story. Got picked up by several of the Boston media outlets.
Boston Globe.
Oh,
also,
really?
Also, somebody from WBZ. They asked me for pictures,
yep.
But I never saw it on WBZ. Did you?
I didn't, but I was busy. I really didn't look.
Huh. So anyway, so he's managing, but I wouldn't say he's doing great because his whole little world has been shook up.
You know how like old people? You know how like 80-year-old people could be doing just fine, and then they fall down a flight of stairs or something,
right.
And then that's it. Like, they go from, like, completely functioning, being able to drive, talk, do everything they want to do. They get one of those type of injuries, and then, because he's at the end of his, what a normal life cycle would be. He's even surpassed what a normal life cycle would be.
He's right past it. Like, I was telling David earlier, the oldest swan in the whole entire world, because in Denmark they tag swans like they do in England, and he was 40 years old. And they didn't even know that until he died, and they read his tag, and they realized he was 40 years old. Currently, the oldest swan on record is 28 years old in England, and Mr. Swan is 27 years old.
Wow.
So that's pretty phenomenal.
Be a battle to the finish.
Yeah.
Number two.
You know, and he could, who knows, if he's left undisturbed and his foot heals, he could live a number of more years. But I think that, I don't think anybody should ever attempt to do that again. Unless he's, you know, I heard about one of our local swans having an arrow through it one time. I mean, unless something like that happens, then,
euthanize.
Yeah, I mean, because that is what will happen.
Pete Mondello told me a story about, he said there was some turkeys in the yard, and all of a sudden one of the turkeys showed up with an arrow in it.
Mm-hmm.
And for two weeks, the turkey was trotting around with an arrow sticking right out of him.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Like, they don't know, surviving, but
right.
Like,
surviving.
With an arrow, sticking an arrow. Can you imagine?
Yeah. Well, skin seals right around it. A lot of times, you know, if you have injury, it's when it comes out that all the blood starts to come out.
Right.
With it.
Like you could probably help the turkey just by cutting
like
either end of the arrow and just
Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The arrow.
So anyway, so
that's one tough turkey.
We'll just hope that,
that's a tough turkey. Horrible pun, right?
Mr. Swan needs both feet for to be fully functioning for winter, because to bust out of ice and things like that. He's really, so he has the summer to heal. I mean, it's early summer, so this would be the time for him to heal.
Critical stage.
But he's not getting
critical
out of the
stage.
Water. He's not getting out of the water.
He is.
Can he walk at all on it?
Yes, he can walk.
Oh, he can.
He's not bearing weight on it very much. So, like, when I have this film footage, it's just heartbreaking of him trying to cross the road after the big scare and the big trauma. Then he tried to cross the road from Henry's.
So, do you have footage of the attempted abduction?
Yes.
You do?
Yes.
So, do you already have the evil... Dun 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 dun. Do you have the background music for that? Because
no.
That sets the tone, and you can really paint the rescuer in a horrible light with that.
So I think I don't know if this part.
Dun, dun, dun.
So the film that I'm making is more of like it's based on Mr. Swan's life. It's not like a pure documentary of it. It's just like it's a children's story, really, and you know. I don't want to go into too much detail, but...
You don't give it away.
But this could take place. Like, if I were making a documentary, I might not put it in. But this, you know...
Scenario
could take place.
This
is
the perfect,
this,
like, arc in the movie where, like, you know, where, okay, he's, you know, this certain disaster looming and everything else, and he makes this big comeback. Be like a Rocky story of the Swan World.
So that could come in. This could be in the movie now, so... Yeah,
you gotta have an interview with the guy. Why don't we put him in here, right? We'll get some terrible lighting. And we'll put in the background, you know, we'll have like a spotlight on him.
Uh-huh.
Right? We'll put like kind of like a screen kind of inside him, and we'll make him talk like the Charlie Brown voice, like wah, 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 hide and disguise his voice because he's afraid that the Swan sympathizers are gonna come after him.
I think I've seen these interviews on SNL or something like that where they do that interrogation.
Yeah, this would be great. We'll set him up. We'll tell him we're going to make him look like a hero. We'll do Michael Moore style. Michael Moore style.
Oh, Michael
Moore. We'll totally set him up and, that'd be great. All right.
As long as he's exercising, that's the big thing.
Because
otherwise, it gets atrophy sets in. That's why now. The minute if you had an operation before, they used to have you bedridden for a week or two.
Right, and then
now the next day you're up and walking because they don't want your muscles to atrophy. Right.
Motion is lotion.
Motion is lotion.
That's what they say. That's what they say. Motion is lotion.
And the reason why we all didn't think he needed to be rescued in the first place is because he was doing that, and because he was eating and drinking and also grooming his feathers.
Right.
And when swans are very ill or in a tremendous amount of pain, all that stops.
For anybody.
For us, too. For us, too. Anyways, I think we're all in agreement that, I think the whole community is in agreement that the best thing for Mr. Swan is to try to heal on his own.
Leave him alone.
Leave him alone, let him try to heal.
Yeah, there's a wisdom in nature.
Yeah.
And sometimes we don't respect
it. So if they come out again, if you see the sign again,
I think instead of just like 10 of us trying to prevent them, I think there's going to be several hundred trying to prevent them.
This would be great.
They're not
footage.
Thinking of coming back out again, are they?
No.
You haven't shamed the guy enough yet?
We left it. We left it that mutually agreed upon that if he worsened, we would contact him.
Oh.
Don't call us, we'll call you. That is awesome. I love it. All right. Let's talk about The Effect at Gloucester Stage. You guys going to see that today?
Yes, we're going to go see it today, the matinee at 2 o'clock. We've never been to a matinee there, but it's Father's Day, so it's something Tom chose to do. I did not choose this activity for him. So.
Like the ballet for me?
Yeah.
Oh, you chose the ballet?
No.
No, I had a girlfriend once that I was...
We were going out
serious. No, it wasn't Father's Day because I didn't have children at the time. It was a girlfriend. Uh-huh. And it was a Christmas present. And she got me tickets to the ballet. And it was obviously Christmas time. Like, you know, it's the end of my lobster season where I'm absolutely exhausted, like just trying to get to the finish line.
Right.
Sleep is critical, you know, really critical to healing and being able to function. And she got me tickets to the ballet in Boston. And I broke up with her the next day.
Oh,
it's like, how could you possibly be that inconsiderate?
Mm-hmm.
And
obviously she knows I'm not a ballet guy. She got tickets for herself. What?
Now, did you have a nice long nap during the ballet? Did you sleep for a couple hours?
I don't know that I went. I don't remember if I went or not, but I was so angry.
I've seen Tom do that, like just fall asleep.
I mean, I've done that at plays. I just can't, you know. So the butterfly superhero plant segment.
Okay.
We're gonna try this out. So butterflies. There's certain plants.
Yes.
That are beneficial for entire like plant ecosystems, right?
Yes. Well, so for example, like when Charles and George and Catherine were helping me to weed the Harborwalk Gardens, they came up with an idea for butterfly superhero plants, mm-hmm. and I just thought that was a great way to. I was telling them about certain plants, and I thought that was such a catchy phrase. And I think that that would help people understand why certain plants are, you know, especially important to butterflies and all pollinators, not just butterflies. So milkweed, I thought we would start with milkweed and talk about how milkweed is not just a caterpillar food plant for monarchs, but it's also a nectar plant for many species of bees and butterflies. And right now, milkweed is just about ready to bloom. And so you see it everywhere, all along, you know, in cracks and sidewalks. You see it on Good Harbor Beach. There's great patches of it on Good Harbor Beach. Most meadows. And so this is the time of year also to when monarchs start arriving as well. So it's kind of interesting that it's blooming right around the same time the monarchs are going to be arriving. So I'd like everybody to look for common milkweed in your garden, or plant it in your garden, or look.
When you did when you did the milkweed project, that was the number one thing, right?
Yes. So if people are going to plant for monarchs, they need to plant common milkweed in this area, common milkweed, marsh milkweed, seaside goldenrod, and New England asters, and that way they'll take care of the butterflies in the summer, and they'll take care of the butterflies when they're migrating.
And where can people get this stuff?
So right now, for example, Cedar Rock Gardens has milkweed.
Our friends.
Yes, our friends at Cedar Rock Gardens. And also Wolf Hill oftentimes has milkweed plants.
I saw Cedar Rock Gardens. They did a post talking about that you can pick your own peonies.
Yes, I put a post up about that. Oh, you saw that?
Did you post that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I posted a picture of a peony and a lease and a peony.
That was you that did it,
yeah,
not them.
And
I think that's a great. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, they
peonies are beautiful.
They're beautiful. They're so fragrant, and peony season might be winding down, but then next they're going to have sunflowers and straw flowers. So
pick your own.
Pick your own all summer.
Is it reasonable priced?
Oh, yes.
Because you can really decorate your house for probably not a lot of money.
Right. Like, I got this huge bouquet from Elise. You'll see it on the blog, and it was like
$9. Wow. Wow.
It was fragrant, and it lasted, when you pick your own right in the field, there's, so fresh picked flowers usually last a lot longer in the vase, especially if you pick them in the morning before the heat hits them.
So, oh, really?
Yeah.
It makes a difference when you pick them during the day.
Yeah, usually in the morning is best because they're nice and cool and they're
they've sucked up all
the
things
overnight. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. If you pick flowers in the middle of the day, oftentimes they're, you know, already kind of depleted and.
You know, it's funny because we have a hydrangea that's in a pot on our deck.
Yes.
And the other day I was looking at it and I was like, "Geez, Kate, your thing's all droopy. It's ready to die." She watered it, and like a couple hours later, it was all vibrant again.
Right. Well, hydrangea comes from the word hydor, which is water is the root. So they like a lot of water, and especially when they're in a pot, they don't have deep roots. So you're going to need to water them more frequently than when they're in a pot. Or the other thing you can do is put them in half sun, half shade, and then you won't have to water them as much. Hydrangeas in a pot. Yeah.
So I want your opinion on something.
Okay.
You've been to the house.
Yes, yeah.
So you're familiar with my driveway.
Uh-oh.
No, you're familiar about my driveway. My driveway is very, very narrow, and it opens up in the back that you can see to a space where four cars could easily park, you know, side by side. so that you could come and go as you please, as long as you park, like a reasonable,
a
conscientious
gentleman.
Not a person that isn't a complete idiot. So, but it seems like half of the time, people pull in
and they
park right in the bottleneck, and they don't pull up that they could allow people to come and go.
Wow.
As they please, even though you can see right in front of you that there's parking spaces that people could come and go.
Well, so you're new to the house, so I would just gently remind them, because most of the people are going to be stopping by are friends.
No, but the problem, the problem is, so here's my dilemma. My thing, what I want to do is get a sign made that says...
Parking in the rear. Can you say that?
No, because people won't do it.
Oh.
I feel like what I need to say is, let me see. I have this all made up. I just want to see. I want to get you.
Fine, all made up.
No. The sign that I'm considering making it says, "Pull up and don't park like an asshole," which I think is very succinct and to the point.
Well, do you want your daughters to see that every time they come home?
That's kind of a good point, I guess.
Yeah.
But I feel like I feel like it would totally get the point across. Like, don't be such a twit. Don't be such a self-serving twit, like mindless twit.
Wow.
But Randy O'Neill, my buddy Randy O'Neill just came in. But you had probably a little bit better suggestion. What was your suggestion for the sign?
I just said if you can't move around the car, well, how about thinking about pulling up?
Yeah, that's a little wordy for a sign.
It is a little wordy. Yeah.
A little wordy. So we gotta boil that down.
How about pull up or go back?
Or go home.
Or go home, yeah.
But you have to tell people where you want them to park, because they're not going to figure out. You have to say, pull up and park in the rear.
See, I feel like people should be maybe that's a woman thing.
Or just say, park in the rear. Just say, park in the rear. Parking in rear. You know.
And that could get taken the wrong way.
That could be. It could be. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like...
As it was coming out of my mouth, I knew that.
You knew where it was going.
Right.
You knew where it
was
going.
It was already coming out of my mouth, so I couldn't really stop it.
I feel like if you put pull up and don't park like an asshole, it like really gets the point, gets them thinking, like, what is he talking about? Oh, if I park right here, people won't be able to come or go. Or if Joe comes home from work at the end of a fucking 14-hour day, he won't have to move his car so I can get out.
Right. Well, I would just have to say, if it was me and I came up and saw that sign, I would be confused. That's all. I would just be confused.
Maybe it's a woman.
How about if you put a sign like right where the bottleneck is and just says, "Don't park here, pull up."
Yeah. That could be the thing. All right, we're going to work on this.
Yeah.
Right, so maybe I'll put up a poll.
There you go.
All
right.
Good idea.
There's the poll. All
forward.
Right. Well, Randy, thanks for that. GloucesterCast 229 is in the books. 230 next time.
230. Oh, my goodness. Wow. You have to join us sometime.
Magnolia Road Race coming up.